It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. In a new report released last week, Wisconsin ranked 15th in the nation for the health of women and children. The America's Health Ranking Health of Women and Children report looked at several key measures to determine the health of Wisconsin's women and children and some of the challenges that the state faces.
Dr. Anna Fuentevilla joins us now. She's the chief medical officer of United Healthcare Community and State, where she oversees the clinical functions of the organization. Dr. Fuentevilla, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
So in broad strokes, how healthy are women and children in Wisconsin, according to this report?
Well, you know, if you look at women and children together, Wisconsin ranked 15 for all of our states, so kind of middle of the road. But the interesting thing about the America's Health Rankings report on the health of women and children is it looks at the population separately, and I think that's what's very informative for the state of Wisconsin, is that the three, when we look at the health of women, Wisconsin fared very well in the top 10 as number 9. But there's definitely variation within the state amongst the population. So if you look at the health of infants, Wisconsin didn't do that well, ranking 21st, or didn't do as well as the health of women. So there is variation within the state, which gives you a view of opportunities on where Wisconsin and communities within Wisconsin can focus more on the health of infants.
Let's focus in first on women and the positive aspects. You said there was reason to be happy about some of the health findings. What were some of those things you were looking at?
Well, I think overall it's very positive. I think one of the major strengths that the study pointed out was a very low prevalence for diabetes in women in Wisconsin. So that's very, very good. I'd say that's a major finding and I think a very positive outcome.
And what else?
I would say another positive is low maternal mortality for women in Wisconsin. That's another finding in the study, which I think is really good. And I would say another important health outcome was that the women in Wisconsin seem to be getting their important preventative care. So if you look at, you know, screening for cancer and dental health visits and getting their flu vaccine, overall, it appears that the women in Wisconsin are really taking care of themselves, going to their health care providers, and getting their prevention care done, which is really important to overall health.
Right, and it looked like cervical cancer screenings was one area that these Wisconsin women were doing pretty well at.
Yep, in the top 7 across the country. So really, it looks like cancer prevention, especially as we measure it for cervical cancer, which is a very tough cancer to diagnose. So cervical cancer screening is very important. So that's good. So those are all positive things about the health of women for Wisconsin.
And what behaviors are maybe more worrying for people in the health field when they look at Wisconsin?
Well, I would say if we keep focusing on the health of women, one of the key findings that the study showed us was a high prevalence of excessive drinking for women. And worse yet is a high prevalence of alcohol during pregnancy. So, you know, that's concerning. Even though the overall health of women is really good, this is an area of opportunity for education, for community focus around really focusing on decreasing unhealthy behaviors in women to continue to promote good health.
I don't know if you have the numbers at your fingertips, but I'd be curious to know exactly where Wisconsin fell on, you know, some of those measures like drinking and the other you mentioned there.
When you look at excessive drinking, Wisconsin was at the bottom of our 50 states at 48th, ranking 48th. That's not good. Another one is smoking, ranking 25th. I guess it's a kind of middle of the road, but still an opportunity. And one of the things I didn't comment earlier when we were talking about overall health, obesity still is a problem for women in Wisconsin, so that's a good area to focus on. But definitely when you look at behaviors that are, self-controlled, that where women can make a change, especially given education and support would be around cessation of smoking and, very importantly, maybe looking at reducing the amount of alcohol intake in Wisconsin.
We're talking right now with Dr. Ana Fuentevilla. She's the Chief Medical Officer of United Healthcare Community and State. And she's talking about the America's Health Rankings Report, The Health of Women and Children. We're taking an in-depth look at the health of women and children in Wisconsin. And I want to switch over and start talking about children right now. Taken as a whole, what did your report find about how healthy Wisconsin's children are?
Yeah, so if we look at the, I'm going to separate children from young children, children from infants, and I'll say that overall, the health of children, Wisconsin ranked number 15. But if you look at the health of infants, Wisconsin ranked 21. So definitely an opportunity for both of those populations. And I'm going to focus on, you know, an area of opportunity because I know we're short on time. But one area I think that's really important is a finding in the report was the high prevalence of drug or alcohol dependence or abuse in children. So, again, it's one of those unhealthy behaviors that can really, if we can address it comprehensively within the community, and really offer solutions for children around drug and alcohol use and abuse or dependence, we could really impact the health of children across Wisconsin. So that's an area of opportunity.
So when you talk about children and drug use and dependence, are you talking up to age 18?
Up to age 17 in the study.
So that's an area that bears looking at. And I know that sometimes we hear about infants being born with drug and alcohol dependence because of parents' use. Is that something that your report takes a look at?
It doesn't look at that specifically, but I think we definitely worry about that as we look at alcohol and drug use in a pregnant woman. So definitely a concern. Another area that I would stress that the study highlighted as an outcome that was adverse is the amount of teen suicide across the state of Wisconsin. Again, in that particular measure, Wisconsin ranked 32nd. So an area of concern, an area for focus. And I think when I think about these behavioral issues and outcomes related to that, poor outcomes related to that amongst kids, I think one of the important findings in the study that we should really highlight is the what the study showed, which is it's more than in order to ensure health for children across America and across Wisconsin, we're finding that children are really getting their preventative care, they're getting their immunizations, and so we have to address, well, what are the other factors that impact the health of children? And that's one of the areas that the study did focus on, that there is a very important element related to a healthy home environment and supportive communities, and without those two, the health of children can't be secured for the future, right? So it's more than just health care. It's really about looking at the health of children more comprehensively and the important impact that adverse childhood events or experiences have on children, that the earlier we focus on, you know, a healthy home environment and community support for children, the better the chances that they won't engage in unhealthy behaviors and that they'll have less chance of developing chronic conditions and that they'll have a healthier life. And so I think the study really highlights that. And some of these outcomes for Wisconsin, it's important to make sure that we direct those stakeholders that are really able to look at the, this more comprehensively for children across Wisconsin. So public health officials, community leaders, healthcare leaders coming together to solve for some of the social determinants that really impact the health of kids.
And just briefly, I wonder if we could touch on what's going on with infants, because you mentioned the infant health had a lower ranking than children. What's going on there?
Yeah, so if we look at kids, one of the areas of concern for Wisconsin, I'm sorry, infants, is neonatal mortality or infant mortality, where Wisconsin's ranking 32nd compared to the other states. So a concern there. That was neonatal mortality, and then we also measured infant mortality within the first year at 23rd in terms of the ranking. So, you know, death of an infant within the first 30 days and then death of an infant within the first year, both areas of concern for Wisconsin. So that's not good. and then also ranking 20th with births before the baby, the baby's term date, right? So clearly there's an area of opportunity here. There's lots of things that will impact that is related to the health of their mom during pregnancy. So I think the study does highlight there that infant health is an area of focus.
Dr. Fuentevilla, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Glad to be with you this afternoon.
That was Dr. Ana Fuentevilla. She's the Chief Medical Officer of United Healthcare Community and State, and she joined us to talk about a new report looking at the health of Wisconsin's women and children.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. In late November of 1978, gay activist and San Francisco City Supervisor Harvey Milk was shot and killed by one of his fellow city supervisors.
He had anticipated that he might be assassinated and recorded cassettes to share some of his final thoughts. Excerpts of those tapes were played in news coverage of the event.
This is to be played only in the event of my death by assassination. I fully realize that a person who stands for what I stand for, an activist, gay activist, becomes the target or the potential target for somebody who is insecure, terrified, afraid, or very disturbed themselves.
Our next guest was in his car driving in Madison when he heard Harvey Milk's final message over the radio, and that inspired him to enter into the world of politics and join the ranks of the first openly gay elected officials in the country.
Dick Wagner joins us now in the studio. He's former chair of the Dane County Board of Supervisors. He's speaking tomorrow in Madison at the Pyle Center at 6 p.m. as part of the UW-Madison Department of Sociology's series, Wisconsin Dialogue. Dick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Well, there you were in your car. What went through your head when you heard, I saw you react just now to
yeah,
that. What did you feel in that moment?
It was very moving. I had started being involved with some gay efforts in town, but that really pushed me forward to do more. And, you know, part of the main issue we have faced for decades is the homophobia and the fact that people would be willing to hurt and even kill us for the mere matter of who we were has been a reality of our lives all of these decades.
Here's another moment from that recording by Harvey Milk, one of three recordings, as I understand. Here he's saying he hopes that in the event of his death by assassination, more people, especially in public positions, would come out of the closet.
I'd love to see every gay doctor come out. I'd love to see every gay lawyer, every gay judge, every gay bureaucrat, every gay architect come out. Stand up and let the world know that we'd do more to end prejudice overnight than anybody could ever imagine.
So did that particular call for people in all walks of life to come out, did that help inspire you to get actively involved in running for office in politics?
Definitely. Though I was interested in politics for a long while, but that was a big motivation.
And were you reluctant to put yourself out there? Before this?
One's not jumping up and down to, you know, bring upon oneself all of this sort of social hostility. But when one feels it's important, one does it. I mean, I got very nasty mail over the years from people. And I know other people who actually got more serious threats than I did. So it's not something you're eager to do, but something you're compelled to do.
Well, Harvey Milk, I mean, you picture him sitting in his camera store with a cassette recorder making those and knowing that and being right that he was under mortal risk. Did you think about that you could have been in the same level of danger running for a similar office?
I did think of it, not, I think, with a great deal of weight, but it was not far from my mind at times. But if you let yourself be immobilized by that, you won't do what you need to do.
No, I said you were among the first people, openly gay people,
right.
Not the first, even in Wisconsin. So you had some...
There are precedents.
Some precedent.
Jim Yaden got elected to the city council, first by the council members themselves and then in a public election. In fact, he got elected before Harvey Milk. And Judy Greenspan actually ran in 73 for the Madison School Board. She didn't win, but she ran in one of the first campaigns of an open lesbian in Madison.
Not a lot of precedent, though, when you decided to file those papers to run for office.
Right.
What kind of reaction? I mean, was this, if you were going to run anywhere in the country, did you feel like Madison was at least a somewhat friendlier place?
Oh, sure, because the city had already adopted a non-discrimination ordinance on the basis of sexual orientation in 1975. So, and I had campaigned for that in 74. And so one knew it was a better place than some other places. And so, yeah, this was a much better place to run. And at one point, we had seven out elected officials here in 1989. When we hosted the Conference of Out Gay Lesbian Elected Officials.
I'm talking to Dick Wagner, former chair of the Dane County Board of Supervisors, about his experience as one of the first openly gay elected public officials in Wisconsin and in the country, for that matter. Things started to change around this time at the statewide level. Now, we're not just talking right. Madison here. Right. What happened in the years after you were elected?
Well, Wisconsin in 82 passed a non-discrimination law, the Gay Rights Bill. It was the first state in the nation to do so, and we were the only state to have one for about 7 years till somebody else caught up with us. We also passed in 83 the Consenting Adults legislation, and then person I termed the fabulous Tony Earle became governor, and he created the Governor's Council on Lesbian and Gay Issues and asked me to be one of its co-chairs. And so many things happened to increase the dialogue about gay folks that went on from the 80s forward.
I imagine in some ways you may have looked at it and thought, wow, these things are changing really quickly. And in another way, it may have felt like it took forever to get that stage. How are you feeling at that time?
At that time, I was just excited. We were doing wonderful things. We were creating the New Harvest Foundation. We were building all kinds of community institutions. But since I've retired, my interest has shifted to what were the pre-Stonewall precedents for our community. And they're remarkable and amazing in so many ways. And that's what I'm going to be talking about on Tuesday.
Yeah, and I want to get into that some sure. Now. Let's go back to the prehistory a little bit before your run for office. Who do you look back on in Wisconsin as inspiration models in a tougher time?
Well, I don't have a lot of names, though I do have some. Joe Koberstein and Keith McCutcheon would be a couple who actually lived in my same house and were there in the 40s, 50s, and 60s and were part of a gay social circle on the east side. Certainly, we had Ted Pierce, who was an African-American man who was here, and I had an interview with him where he described gay life in the 1930s in Madison and how active that it was. And then my research has uncovered a whole series of Wisconsin academics in the 40s, 50s, who actually, in studying homosexuality, give voice to the sayings of gay men. It wasn't the purpose of their studies, but gay men seized the opportunity to be part of the studies as a way to get their own narratives into the discussion.
Now, in that era, the pre-60s era, how out could someone really be?
They really couldn't be out because you could get arrested, and many were, for criminal activity. But again, they spoke with a voice, and the voice that they spoke of talked about they were concerned with finding relationships, finding love. It was not just sex, which is what the presumption would have been of some of the researchers and other folks. They also had networks of communication and social organizations which existed pre-Stonewall. We think all of that stuff comes after Stonewall, but it was really existing a lot pre-Stonewall. There were bars and social institutions that existed pre-Stonewall. So the links between pre- and post-Stonewall in our own state's gay history is really quite fascinating.
So as someone who then ultimately ran for office, and what kind of debt do you feel you have to those people and their voices?
I have a lot of debt, and that's the thing is I didn't know their voices when I began. And so I want people today to hear their voices, which comes through this research from a number of Wisconsin academics, and understand that they're part of a much larger chain of history. Larry Kramer has said you can't be a people without a history. And so part of this discussion is to talk about what our history is so that people will know it.
You it seems like you might want to, if you could, time travel and show the people who's writing about where we are now.
Right. Well, actually, some of my research, I know the social geography of what gay folks were like pre-Stonewall and Madison. I know the places that they went for social life. I know the places where they actually got arrested in some cases. I have a number of the police reports of their arrests that I've studied. So that time travel would be a very interesting thing for me with my map of the past.
Yeah. Now, that's what led up to your decision that day to actively get involved in politics. Let's talk about some of the things that have happened since.
Sure.
Same-sex marriage rulings in the courts.
Right.
Openly LGBT U.S. senator and U.S. congressperson from Wisconsin.
Right, we're the only state that has three elected congresspeople, Steve Gunderson, as well as Mark Pocan and Tammy Baldwin. And so, you know, there's something in the water or something here. I mean, most everybody thinks gay history happens on the East or West Coast, but there's a lot of it in the Midwest that's not known, and that's part of my crusade right now is to make it known. You know, Lloyd Barbie, who started Wisconsin Sex Reform in 1971, right after Stonewall, he introduced probably the first gay marriage bill in the country in the Wisconsin legislature. He didn't expect it to pass, but he introduced it and put that on the agenda.
So back in 1978, you were sitting in your car hearing the news of Harvey Milk's death.
Right.
Out there right now might be a young gay or lesbian person, LGBT person, hearing you talk on the radio. Maybe they're in their car. Maybe at the same intersection right now. What would you say to them about the past and the future?
You need to live your life boldly. You need to be part of a community. And you need to share the story of what our lives are. The homophobia that all these folks experienced, and they knew it was homophobia. They knew they weren't sick. They reject the diagnosis that was tried to put on them in these past decades. But there's still a lot of work out there to convince people that we are citizens of this country and that we have contributions to make and that we will make them.
Dick, thanks so much for joining us today.
Sure.
That was Dick Wagner, former chair of the Dane County Board of Supervisors. He's speaking tomorrow at 6 p.m. at the Pyle Center in Madison.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.